Thanks for selling your car to Carvana. Here's your check.
Whoa, when did I get here?
What do you mean?
I swear it was just moments ago that I accepted a great offer from Carvana online. I must have time traveled to the future.
It was just moments ago. We do same day pickup. Here's your check for that great offer.
It is the future.
It's the present and just the convenience of Carvana. Sorry to blow your mind.
It's all good. It happens all the time.
Sell your car the convenient way to
Carvana.
Pickup times may vary and fees may apply.
Lowe's knows how to help make your home holiday ready for less. Get Select Style Selections vinyl flooring for just $1.99 per square foot and have it installed before the festivities begin. Our team can help you every step of the way. See a Lowe's Red Vest associate or visit lowes.com/holiday install to get started. Lowe's, we help, you save. Basic install only. Date restrictions apply. Subject to availability. Install by independent contractor. See associate for details. Contiguous U.S. only.
Astonishing Legends Network.
Listen to the Astonishing Junk Drawer exclusively at patreon.com/astonishinglegends.
I don't think people are taking time off work to hit this.
You sent me some video of you dancing around the kitchen. It was amazing.
Using any white drunk college kid can dance to.
I'll just stick with the AI stuff.
That's Rowan said that, not me.
My math teacher, she doesn't explain it that well.
Well, that's the hallucination, right? That's like AI hallucination.
We have lives too.
Mother Shipton's cave.
Rich Haddam is coming. Jim Harold is coming.
I'm doing a lot of laughing, is it?
Right.
Astonishing Legends would like to thank BetterHelp, ZocDoc, our contributors at patreon.com, and you, our listeners, for making tonight's show possible.
Those fortunate enough to be from or have visited Hawaii know it is a beautiful and magical place. Resting far out in the Pacific Ocean, it is nearly the same distance from Hawaii to Los Angeles as Los Angeles to New York City. The 8 primary islands are spread out over 350 miles of the Pacific. It is the only U.S. state south of the Tropic of Cancer. The Polynesians settled the island chain between 1,000 and 1,200 years ago. In 1789, a British-born American fur trader named Simon Metcalf wreaked havoc on local chiefdoms in a series of events that ultimately led to the capture of his small schooner, the Fair American, and two of his men, John Young and Isaac Davis. These two men would become trusted translators and advisors to King Kamehameha I, working to help him conquer warring chiefs across the islands and unify Hawaii. Kamehameha I will become the first of 8 Hawaiian monarchs to rule all of Hawaii for the next 100 years. During all these events, countless battles took place over struggles for power, and in those battles, thousands of warriors died. In just one of those battles in 1792, King Kamehameha I's army pushed over 700 warriors off a cliff on Oahu near the end of his ultimately successful effort to conquer all of the Hawaiian Islands. 100 years later, in 1895, construction workers building what is now the disused Old Poly Road found 800 skulls at the base of the cliff, presumed to be those warriors from the Battle of Nu'uanu. That's an oversimplification of Hawaiian history for the sake of the cold open of a podcast. Still, it's intended to be enough to convey that for over 900 years, there was no shortage of struggles for power across the islands among many different chiefs. More strife would ensue when businessmen from America, Germany, and Britain conspired to overthrow the monarchy, worried that their financial futures were under threat. Even the U.S. president at the time, Grover Cleveland, who tried to restore it in the face of this threat, failed, due to strong capitalist resistance that ultimately led to the annexation of Hawaii as a U.S. state. In 1993, the United States apologized for overthrowing the Hawaiian kingdom. In the dead of night, many Hawaiians, tourists, and visitors have heard and seen something they cannot rationally explain. The sound of a conch shell horn portends the approach of something ominous. Mysterious drumming and ghostly processions of soldiers appear, sometimes marching along ridges or down sacred Hawaiian valleys. They appear to float above the ground, their legs invisible in the mist. Sometimes they march toward the ocean, but others have seen them rise up out of the water with lit torches as they march onto the shore. The formation of their processions is as varied as the eyewitnesses who've seen them. These are the Night Marchers of Hawaii. And if you haven't seen them, Count yourself lucky, because unless you have royal blood in your veins and are recognized by the spirits among them, looking at them is said to bring about a violent death.
Welcome back to Astonishing Legends. I'm Scott Philbrook, and this is Kamuela Kaneshiro.
My family and I might be safe from the Night Marchers, because our ancestor was the Kawaii Ali'i, and one of King Kamehameha the Great's most trusted advisors, Chief Kaiana. Kaiana died at the historic Battle of Nu'uanu, and may walk with the procession.
Join us tonight for our episode on the Night Marchers of Hawaii.
And we're back.
That we are, folks. Some very important information tonight, so don't skip the housekeeping or you're going to be confused the next few weeks, which brings me to
confused.
My first point.
Yeah.
I know, I'm confused too. After tonight's show, the Astonishing Legends main show is taking our first ever summer break. We will be dark for 4 weeks, coming back with a new show on June 22nd.
I don't think we should really call it a break, because we're going to be working pretty much the whole time.
Well, yes, my friend, that is true. We just really need a break from the main show production, because we're working on something new and we need a little time to get it off the ground.
True.
But during this break, we'll be running some material to keep you entertained from time to time. But in the meanwhile, if you haven't heard the other three shows on the Astonishing Legends Network, it's a great time to find and subscribe to them.
Yes, now would be the perfect time to check out the Midnight Library's wickedly macabre offerings of spooky history.
Or Scared All the Time's reckless abandon on their weekly trips to the fear tier.
Or the astonishingly candid new show from Rich, Richard Haddam's Paranormal Bookshelf.
Each one is radically different from us, yet has a special flavor of astonishing herbs and spices.
Ooh.
So definitely find and subscribe to those if you haven't already. Please remember, it's exceptionally difficult to get a new show off the ground, so help them out by recommending them to your friends.
And in other news, if you want to hear me in our absence, and I can't imagine why you would, but I was just on our friend Chris Williamson's podcast, Me and My Friends. You'll want to hear Chris. He's terrific. That's an hour and 20 minutes of me and Chris talking about how Astonishing Legends got started and what things about Scott make me crazy, but also just about life in general. you were paying attention. Fun stuff, life in general, just thoughts about everything. That's a real two buddies having a convo. No beers, just a couple of guys talking about life and shows and stuff. And
no
just
secret beers and coffee mugs even?
You know what? He may have had one. It's hard to tell. His entire studio is painted black, so he looks like he's floating in space, in outer space.
Oh, there you go.
He
like a Star Trek villain from the first Star Trek.
That's right. He should have little lights behind him, but it's a very cool effect. And, really puts the focus on him. But he will have a can of something going occasionally.
Well, folks, look for that. It's called Me and My Friends. That's with Chris Williamson, and they just dropped that one with Forrest in it. That's it for the housekeeping tonight. Let's pivot to tonight's episode, which we're super excited about. We've been wanting to cover this for a long time. It's the Hawaiian Night Marchers. We've been talking about this since we started the show, really.
Yes, we have. And why this one is particularly different and special to me is because, unlike a lot of the other legends that you hear around the world of things that kind of happen, the Marfa lights, let's say, or the Brown Mountain lights, or some kind of something strange seen off in the distance for whatever reason. And it may be because I have lived on the West Coast for so long and are just been adjacent. And you know, people who, many who have visited Hawaii, I seem to have run into a lot of people who've actually think they've seen the Night Marchers, along with other Hawaiian legends, Madame Pele, different odd things that have happened, some terrifying slightly until you realize what they are. But just for whatever reason, I've run into people who've like, oh yeah, I think I saw Madame Pele once. We talked about that. Maybe we'll talk about that with our guest once. The gentleman that we met at the podcast movement back in Anaheim.
Oh yeah.
He had several stories having grown up there. Yeah. It's just one of those things where you hear about these other legends, and maybe you'll come across somebody who's experienced that, but for whatever reason, it's not that it's very common, but it is a special. It makes an impact on you. And for me, like I said, I've met more people who've heard of this one as much as any other legend.
Yeah, and that actually brings me to my next point. Some topics are easy for us to learn about, become temporary experts on, you know, do a little reading, do a little research, dive in and do some writing and everything. But the others are a little too complex or too far removed from our personal experience.
Yes, and I would say it's those topics that we try and find outside experts for. And for people who just want to hear us, I again will say,
Let's hear from somebody who really knows what they're talking about, especially for a topic that's so rich in cultural history. Let's hear from somebody who is immersed and lives in it and is from it.
Yeah, Hawaiian folklore falls firmly in that category if we need to get somebody on. Polynesian culture is rich with fascinating history, and Hawaii and the legend of the Night Marchers is no different. So we did seek out somebody who could come on the show and share a native Hawaiian perspective on this fascinating topic.
Yeah, and it turns out that tonight's guest actually emailed us 3 years ago about the Night Marchers and other Hawaiian legends. And for those folks who get an email from me, usually a year or two or three later, that stupid podcast. Oh my God, it's 3 years later. That's about our speed. But as we always say, we archive everything. And one of us will remember like, hey, didn't somebody reach out to us about this specific topic or this thing?
That's right.
And then we'll search and find it and then get back to them. But we apologize to everyone who's experienced that, as well as tonight's guest. So we did remember that. And so we dug back into the inbox about the Night Marchers and asked him if he would do us the honor of coming on Astonishing Legends to talk about the Night Marchers.
Which is a nice way of saying that after 3 years, we finally wrote him back. So tonight we're welcoming Kamuela Kaneshiro to the show. Kamu's been podcasting for 20 years and currently has a podcast of his own called Legends from the Pacific, which just published its 154th episode.
That is super respectable. And most importantly, he's an Asian native Hawaiian, born and raised in Honolulu, and he's written several books as well.
All right, Sarah, roll our discussion with Kamu. All right, folks, we would like to welcome Kamuela Kaneshiro to the show from Legends from the Pacific. Kamu, welcome to Astonishing Legends.
Well, thank you very much for having me. It's been a long haul, but it's definitely worth it.
Now, you've been in the podcasting game for how long?
I started in 2004, 20 years ago as of this time, with my first podcast, Off the Air's Geek Nation. We talked about the real important stuff that needed to be discussed, like comic books, geek culture, and movies, and cartoons, and everything. Yeah. So
that's what podcasting was meant for. Yeah.
Yes, exactly right. We did that for a few years. We were actually, at the time, it was internet radio because there was no such thing as podcasts.
Right.
So we did 2 hours of that on our own, and then we did 1 hour on AM radio, Kumu AM radio.
Oh, that's fun. I have always wanted to be on radio. I don't know why. Just I've always, you know, and we have a friend who has a show in Nova Scotia and he got a deal where he's on the radio and I was so jealous of it. Like, it seems so cool to actually be broadcasting on the radio.
Well, I definitely have a face for radio.
So, so do we.
Faces for podcasting. Yeah.
So how about a little bit about your background? You are a native Hawaiian, right?
I am. I'm a part native Hawaiian. Attended Kamehameha Schools, which is a private school for Hawaiians. And I'm also Asian American. Well, I'm very busy during May because of Asian American Pacific Islander Heritage Month.
Yeah. Yes.
And that does not bother me at all. I love talking about my culture and sharing my heritage and customs and everything because there's a lot of unknown things out there. So I'd just like to help set the record straight, which is also why I do my current podcast, Legends from the Pacific, which is Asian and Pacific Islander cultural history, as well as folklore. Just to set the record straight on myths that are being fractured or lost to time, some professionals actually said what I'm doing is making the Asian and Pacific Islander version of Grimm's fairy tales.
Oh, that's so
love
cool.
It. Yeah.
Yeah. So you're protecting that legacy and people have, I guess, latched on. How long have you been doing Legends from the Pacific now?
This is my fourth year, and the feedback has been amazing. I've gotten just really heartfelt emails from fans that thank me for not only helping them remember their history, memories that they had. There are a few that said that I helped bring their families together. There are broken families.
Oh, wow.
One of them found my podcast and shared it amongst their family, and then it got them talking again. Also, there was several emails that said that they were embarrassed for who they were, their heritage, where they came from, their background, because they're bullied, picked on, and they're just embarrassed and did not want to be part of that. But through my podcast, it helped them get the strength to learn about their heritage. And now they're excited and they embrace it and they're proud of who they are. And they actually want to go to the places that I talk about.
That is super cool.
We always talk about when we discuss, especially things like the paranormal and personal experiences, and we'd love to get to some of yours, is that it's a very personal, very intimate experience and something that's kind of hard to share. And you get embarrassed by just having experienced something odd that you don't want to talk about because of the way people react. And it's often very negative. But talking about it and bringing it out allows people, gives them the strength to discuss these things and not be ashamed of what's happened to them or what they've seen or what they believe they've seen, and really discuss it and not fear these things. It's a really terrific thing that you're doing, especially on the cultural side, which is a little more concrete. But I think, you know, especially with legends and cultural history and your personal experiences with, you know, whatever background you have, it's good to talk about it and it's good to share. And it's good to see and hear other people doing that because it does feel like it is some kind of community. And once you've joined it, it's kind of a special place you make for yourself. So we're fascinated to get to some of these things and get to the bottom of these because we also like to set the record straight or at least give the background on these things. So we're so glad and fortunate to have you here to shed a little light on that.
Totally. So we are going to be talking about the Night Marchers. First off, is there anything that you wanted to, you had questions about, or did you want me to, because it's a large thing to sort of grapple and get your hands around, so.
Well, I'll start off. This is out of order, of course, but just to dispel one myth, perhaps, I've heard from a lot of people, you know, when you talk about them, one of the prevailing origin stories or myths and misconceptions, perhaps, about the Night Marchers is that you'll ask them, say, well, what's that about? It's like, well, it's a bunch of warriors. When one of the kings or chiefs lost in battle to, I think, some of the Europeans, he was so ashamed and embarrassed for himself and his warriors that he, out of desperation and shame, marched them off the cliff to their deaths as a way of like, that's it. We're going to off ourselves if we can't stand a good fight with these invaders. So have you heard of that version of the Night Marchers ordering his own men to march off the cliff?
I have not really, I'm not very familiar with that one.
Okay. It's like with any myths or legends, there's always variations right. And some live and, you know, some survive and some kind of get snuffed out.
Some are also misinterpreted.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And this is another factor of why stories are sort of fractured is because There's an error with the storyteller, be it intentional or unintentional.
The telephone game, as we say.
Right. Exactly. But the whole thing with Night Marchers is they are a group of elite chiefs and they're warriors and they march in procession, or it's their procession that goes from, they're on all the islands, all Hawaiian islands, mm-hmm. and they march from temple to temple. There's a bunch of things that say you cannot do and that you can do with the Night Marchers. One of the things is they actually show up on a night called Pokane. And that it translates to the Night of Kane, which is, Kane is one of the major gods of Hawaii, one of the four major gods. And that is on the 27th night of the lunar month. So there's a speculation about them appearing at this time because they don't have a long shadow. Now, ali'i are said to have, it's all about mana or power. To maintain an ali'i's power or mana, they did several things, and these are one of the things. You cannot look at the ali'i. Only their retainers or lesser ali'i can do that. Another thing is you cannot touch an ali'i. That would be taking their mana. And you cannot touch their shadows. So this is why on Pokane, which is, it provides just enough light so they can actually do what they need to do as far as he'eau or he'eau temple upkeep, because they were the only ones allowed in the temple along with the kahunas, or the priests, or the knowledgeable in ancient ways. But the ali'i were the only ones that were able to go in there and maintain their duty of maintaining the he'eau. Hmm. And so because of that, the Pokane night would be the night they had the less amount of shadow, so they didn't have to worry about their shadow touching somebody and, you know, losing their mana. So a way that they would get back their mana, of course, is immediate death to the person who stole their mana.
Oh, okay.
That would be the way.
Yeah.
Right. So if a commoner or somebody saw an ali'i from a distance, then of course the warriors would go hunt them down and kill them.
Right? Even from a distance?
Yes.
So one of these folks that is seeing this off on a ridge somewhere, you're still in danger. It's not just about them being close and aware that you've seen them. It's like if you're casting eyes on them, you're potentially in trouble with them.
Right. But once again, if you're far off, then the warriors cannot get you. So you're
okay.
essentially safe.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Super Sale and get 40% off paints and stains September 19th through the 24th. With prices starting at $29.39, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Pro Savings Days are back at Lowe's. My Lowe's Pro Rewards members save even more with limited-time doorbuster deals. Save $5 on 24-count Contractor's Choice 42-gallon trash bags, now just $14.78. Plus, get your choice select DeWalt Elite Series saw blades for $9.98. Not a Pro Rewards member? Join for free today at Lowe's. Valid through 9/17. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, loyalty programs subject to terms and conditions. See Lowe's.com/terms for details. Subject to change.
Hello, everyone. I'm Kelsey, and this is Astonishing Legends. Let's get back to the show.
Something I read about mana, and you can correct me if I'm kind of off track here, is that it is the universal, at least for Pacific Islanders, it is a universal source, and because we're all Star Wars fans here, like the Force. It's a supernatural spiritual power, but instead of being from the outside existential, and you receiving it, it's kind of believed to be a cultivated power that the individual can gather up, and you can build up this mana, this spiritual, supernatural energy. And that seems to track with what you're saying here, is that if somebody from the outside takes that from you, you have to get it back to restore your power.
Right. You could actually acquire mana several ways. One is through what they call the unbroken rainbow, where siblings, royal siblings, would marry into each other. That was a way to keep, preserve mana. To actually capture mana would be to get the remains of an individual. Usually the bones is where the mana is stored. So if you actually had bones and you collected the bones, then you can actually get that individual's mana that way. Another way would be, like I was saying, visually seeing the Ali'i, touching the Ali'i, even their shadow. But if you're a commoner and you ended up seeing an Ali'i or violating this, which was known as a kapu or a absolute forbidden law that you would not break. If you broke any kapus, death was immediate, just to restore the balance of nature and such. But there was a way to sidestep it. If you actually raced to a city of refuge, I believe each island had them, but there's only one that remains, or a few that remain. The more popular one is on the Big Island. But there are very isolated, difficult places to get to, which is why people would usually die in an attempt to get to these places because of treacherous currents, surfs, reefs, whatever. But if you ended up reaching the city of refuge, then you would be forgiven, but you only be able to stay there for the rest of your life.
Are the Night Marchers seen on every Hawaiian island? Are they seen all over Hawaii?
Yes. Each island has their own Night Marcher, because that is essentially the Ali'i and the chief. Now, there's different theories on how you can actually survive the Night Marchers. One is by not seeing them, because in real life, they would have their procession. Their procession would bang drums, blow conch shells to announce that they are arriving. So that gave their people, commoners, and others ample time to finish what they were doing, to either go into their houses, or if they were doing something, just to get on the ground and bow. But they had to watch the ground because they would see the shadows to make sure that the Ali'i shadow would not touch them or not fall upon them.
It's terrifying. And when you start to research this, you see a lot of video clips of natives who have their own stories and experiences, which are concrete experiences, where it's not like, well, I didn't know what I saw. Like, I saw this happen. I saw the people levitating, the marchers off the ground, and it's a very clear thing. And also mixed a lot of times with dreams, premonitions, or some other supernatural feeling that we have seen connected to other paranormal experiences that people, the run-of-the-mill Victorian ghost, let's say. This is really rooted more in tradition and ancient customs and laws, as you said, like kapu, and the code of conduct and laws and regulations that have been passed down But I was going to say one story that I heard, you know, an old uncle who had and a nephew who found a skull in a cave or some kind of hidden buried place, brought it home. If you break the kapu, even unintentionally, it could be immediate death. He brought it home. And so the uncle just flipped out like, oh, my gosh, you should not have done that. We're going to get visited. And according to his story, that night, they hear the marchers coming. They hear the beating of the drums, the conch shell blowing. And so the uncle had, he could sense them approaching, but did not want to look up. And he placed the skull in the path and then get face down, prone on the ground, faces in the dirt, and just out of respect and fear, and said that we will replace this. And they did, and they were spared. And it's, so many people have these really harrowing and very detailed experiences. Do they make themselves known that solidly, I guess?
From my experiences, they usually make themselves known through sounds and the unexplained. Nothing as massively concrete as that.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of sounds and such. And it's difficult because, like I mentioned, they actually travel throughout all the islands, different groups, because I believe it's not the same group. It could be the same group. We're not exactly sure. From my research and everything, there's different beliefs that it could be the same group. It could not be the same group. I've encountered night marchers. When I was a child, I remember we lived on this really large stretch road in the neighborhood. And you know how whenever somebody would walk by some dogs, you would hear them barking in the distance, and then they'd stop and go to the next house, and you could hear the progression down the street that way.
Right, right.
There were times where we would hear that, but then when they got to the next house that had barking dogs, their dogs would bark. But the first set of dogs would keep barking. And we would encounter that sometimes because there would be a group of people, usually kids, wandering around, walking around the street. But when these unusual nights happened, the entire street, a street full of barking dogs, would be barking the whole time. And right when it got to the last group of houses where their dogs would be barking, all of a sudden, all the dogs in the street stopped barking at once.
Wow.
Barking, then silence. There would be no follow-up bark. There would be no yelping, no sound at all. You're just barking, then quiet. So several times that happened to me. I would ask my grandmother, who was part Hawaiian, what that was. And she would always say that there was someone outside. And that would interest me, so I wanted to look. And she would say, don't look. And I would be like, why? And she would say that because if the man outside sees you, they take you away. There were several times where when that would occur, I'd go by the big window that we had, hide behind the drapes and such, and then peek out. And I would see nothing, but I'd hear the dogs barking like crazy. So I always try to approach things scientifically, logically. So yeah, it could have been groups of teenagers, but then it wouldn't explain why the entire street was barking. It could have been a cat, but then usually cats or wildlife like that would be deterred or not go down the entire street. But also, what would explain all the barking just suddenly stopping and there'd be nothing, just no sound after?
What larger mammals are native to Hawaii that are wild that you might encounter at night?
Stray dogs, cats, and pigs.
Okay.
But the pigs usually stay in the mountainside. They don't really go off to the wander around the streets.
Right.
Are they just regular pigs or are they like boars?
Boars.
So a little bit dangerous, like wild boars?
Wild boars, yeah.
Yeah.
Especially if they were protecting their young.
Everybody, I'm sure at some point, has been in a neighborhood where you get the dogs barking and they rile each other up and it goes back and forth, you know, territorial thing. But as you said, it usually kind of trails off. You know, it's like, who's going to get the last word or bark in? But it doesn't usually stop right on a dime and they all stop. But we've heard many stories also, especially with some strange phenomenon, where suddenly it gets every bird and insect in the forest stops immediately. It gets really quiet and creepy, like there's no air. And then once that moment has passed, it all picks back up again. Then you hear crickets again. So that also tracks a little bit with the sounds. And the control or effect on animals who yes. seem to know. And have you heard or come across people that have heard the drums and the conch shell? And what is that like?
Well, I actually encountered that. The second time that I saw the Night Marchers, to my knowledge, was actually seeing them along a mountain range. And that was from a distance, to go back to what Scott asked earlier.
Which island were you on for that? Where were those mountains?
The ridge was on Oahu, and I was a child at that time.
Okay.
I ended up noticing that I'd say it was around midnight. We were just driving home from a party, and I remember the detail of that. And then later on, I just never forgot that. And when I ended up meeting a local historian, Dr. Glenn Grant,
yes,
I shared some aspects of that. And he said, he was perplexed. And he said, "Are you serious? You saw that?" And I went into exact detail. And he told me that that was not just the Night Marchers, but it was an extremely rare version of the Night Marchers, which are the demigod Night Marchers. Okay. So that gives us another perspective. There are essentially two possible Night Marchers. One is the chiefs and the warriors. And this other one is a group of Hawaiian or Polynesian gods or demigods.
That's amazing. Why don't you just, since we're here on it and we sort of naturally came to it, why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about Dr. Grant and what he was known for?
Dr. Glenn Grant was known as the ghost guy or the Obake man. Obake is a slang term for locals for ghost. But yeah, he was a doctor who attended the University of Hawaii, and then he became an instructor at University of Hawaii, but mainly other universities. I believe the Tenko? I'm not sure on that one.
Okay.
So other universities as well, where he taught American history. But his passion was collecting these stories, and he collected lore for usually Asian, but then also Pacific Islander. And then, in fact, when I started my current podcast, Legends from the Pacific, I initially did that on Sunday nights out of respect, because Dr. Grant was on AM radio, Kumu, and he had a radio show, and that was Sunday nights. So I tried to do that. He wrote several books, and he and his business partner, Jill Stouse, they were the ones that were the main ones that was all about the books and preserving the culture, sharing the stories, and Dr. Grant would even have these ghost tours. I actually had the privilege, after his passing, to be the storyteller at the Mo'ili'ili Halloween ghost story. So I led that, which was something that Dr. Grant normally would do. So I felt like I was very honored to do that.
Wow. When he said, okay, well, this is what you saw, and it was this rare version, that was based on the formations that you observed of the procession. Is that right?
Yes.
And those formations that you observed were based on where torches were in the distance, like how they were arranged, like how the perception was organized, basically?
There were certain aspects. I don't want to really get into the details, because then people would just be like, oh, well, yeah, I saw that too. And so,
right.
But yeah.
Okay, that's fair.
That's why he was very taken aback with the specific details that I mentioned him. I'm like, so was that Night Marchers? And he was like, those weren't just Night Marchers. And I'm like, oh, I had no idea.
Didn't you and Dr. Grant, you had formed some sort of group or organization? What was that?
We did. We formed a society. In fact, it was Valentine's Day. Uh-huh. I walked into his store, and he was talking with somebody and said, what I would really like to do is form a group or society here that would go and investigate these things. And I said, well, if we do, I'd be the first to sign up. And we formed the society right there. And he asked me about my background and history, and I told them that I had a solid background of personal, private investigations on my own. And my lineage was that my family is essentially one of the very few Hawaiians that have authenticated lineage that ties us directly to Chief Kaiana, who was King Kamehameha's right-hand man, most trusted advisor. And currently, Jason Momoa is working on an Apple podcast series where he is my ancestor.
Oh, wow. Wow. That's amazing.
That
is so cool. I know that your ancestor, he died in battle, didn't he?
He died at the Battle of Nu'uanu, which was the final battle in Kamehameha's campaign to unite all the islands. It occurred on Oahu. is near the Pali, which is the area known as Nu'uanu, and it was the bloodiest, most violent battle that occurred. A lot of people ended up dying. They said the rivers ran red with blood for days.
Oh my gosh.
Essentially, Kamehameha flanked the armies and such and pushed them off the Pali. And that was a key part of the victory, which was reenacted in the beginning of 300, the movie.
Yes,
so okay. I don't know if that was accurate or not, but as soon as we saw that in Hawaii, we were like, oh, that's the Pali in the Battle of Nu'uanu.
Right, okay.
Well, that's also mythic. It's the Battle of Thermopylae, where you have a large, overwhelming force and a smaller force repelling them at great odds. And usually, you know, one favors the other. In this case, the overwhelming force of Kamehameha and his brilliant tactical decisions is what brought all the islands together. And so it's very, I feel ambivalent about that. And like, yeah, you got your own little fiefdom going on your island as a chief or king. And then suddenly you have somebody saying like, no, we're all going to group together. It's like, well, we're not really into that. And then you're going to have to fight to the death to preserve that and then surrender to form something greater culturally and as a small nation.
Culturally, in today's Hawaii, how is that seen, that unification process? How is it viewed culturally today?
There's going to be people on both sides, and the loudest people are going to be the ones that people believe are the majority. But in actuality, I believe that a lot of people embrace the Hawaiian kingdom that Kamehameha made. It's just a question of how the Hawaii was overthrown. And there's a lot of fictitious beliefs about that and such, and how Hawaiians are saying like, oh, our land was stolen. And it was like, okay, sort of, but during Kamehameha II, who was the son of Kamehameha the Great, Lunalino, he ended up authorized the Great Mahele, which is regardless of who you were, ali'i, commoner, kahuna, what have you, if you're Hawaiian, you got a piece of land. And you could do whatever you wanted with that piece of land. The problem with that was our Hawaiian ancestors did not understand land ownership because they could not comprehend how an individual could own a piece of land. In our mind, only the gods could own the land. And right. So because of that, the Hawaiians were caretakers to the land. Our job was to essentially cultivate the land, make sure everything was balanced, and never disrupt the land because that was owned by the gods. So in that mentality, they would sign pieces of paper that would give away their land and state that, oh, yeah, I get these things that I really need. But in actuality, they were not educated enough to understand land ownership.
They didn't understand what they were sacrificing. They only understand that they were getting something that would help them, but never dreamed what was actually happening in terms of ownership with the land was happening.
Right. Have no idea about land ownership. And that was like a huge detriment, but it's unfortunate that happened.
Your relative that was for Kamehameha the Great, what was his name again?
Chief Kaiana.
What kinds of things did he advise Kamehameha on?
He was a military advisor. He was an ali'i for the island of Kauai.
Oh, okay.
And he joined Kamehameha early in his campaign to the point where Kamehameha trusted him so much that he shared his favorite wife, Queen Ka'ahumanu, with him. And that was like the highest honor that you could bestow upon anyone. So something happened with my ancestor where they were building up for the Battle of Nu'uanu.
Yeah.
Kamehameha gathered his group and council together. But he did not include my ancestor for some reason. My ancestor was like, listen, what's going on? And they just kept passing him off. And then Chief Kaiana, my ancestor, was like, okay, well, if you're not going to include me, then I don't agree with this. So he left and he joined the other side.
Oh, right. I feel like I read something about that.
So then he ended up fighting against Kamehameha with the remaining chiefs and everything at the Battle of Nu'uanu.
See, I'm glad you clarified that because I remember now reading a little something about that. I was like, wait, I can't figure out which side he's on at this point.
Right.
So,
and that's why. So okay. That's why I'm interested to see what they do with the Apple series, because it's like some actually claim that he was a Benedict Arnold and stuff. And it was just like, we can't say that. We don't know what was going on. So, right, and then it could have been a tactical thing of Kamehameha not including him because of something else, or it could be a misunderstanding between the two.
Right, right. Okay, so do you have an understanding of your connection to him from a lineage standpoint?
I believe that's five greats, my mother's side. So it was funny because when I would go to Kamehameha schools, they would say, like, can you bring in your family lineage, the chart? And I'm like, okay. So I'd bring in the chart, and right. It was, I understand it's a big deal because yeah. My instructors were saying, this is very important because Kamu's family is the only one that's authenticated to the point where the Bishop Museum, which is the Smithsonian of the Pacific, acknowledges this. And it was newspaper news back in the 70s where my ancestor, my great uncle, who was Hawaii's top genealogist, Homer Hayes, ended up like putting everything together and then authenticating it, and got a calabash, a bowl, as well as some artifacts that the Bishop Museum said, these are yours. And we're like, no, you can hold on to it because we don't have the facilities to keep this.
Wow, that is so cool.
It was embarrassing, which is why I was like, this is elementary. I'm like, don't talk about me. And I don't want to be known here. You know, it's like,
right.
Come on. It's just like, no.
It's like, yeah, every kid, you just want to fit in. Yeah. You don't want
right,
to
yeah,
singled
it's
out.
Like, and so it's essentially like they said five greats. So great, 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 great grandfather.
And every now and then, maybe there's some low talk of reinstating the nobility in this case. If that happened, you would be in the mix on that.
There's all this talk about reinstating Hawaiian sovereignty, the sovereignty movement, and what that would look like. If that actually occurred, then my family would have a right to put our hat in the ring to be considered for the rulers because of our lineage, the authenticated lineage, as well as some other people. But I honestly think that would not really happen because Hawaii is too much of a central strategic location for America. And also, there's so many working parts and everything. But if we ended up doing that where the Hawaiian sovereignty movement occurred, I think it would be a elected official thing instead of going back to the monarchy.
Right.
So that's
right.
Why there's critical pieces of why that would not really swing into my favor unless it'd be like, right, consider us. And then I'm also running. So.
Right. Right. Are there ever any ceremonial things to participate in for your family, or it's just all just.
It's all just. Yeah. Pomp, circumstance, all that stuff. But it's like, and that's fine because I'd prefer everything to be as Hawaiian as a group and culture instead of an individual. But that's just me.
Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
This is Cassidy Price in Louisville, Kentucky. And when I'm not trying to convince my friends of things like aliens and alternate dimensions, I'm listening to Astonishing Legends. Let's get back to the show.
Well, Kamu, I don't know if you've heard of something called the Wild Hunt. And just quickly, I mean, this is just pulling from the wiki entry on the Wild Hunt. It's a folklore motif appearing in various religions and mythology across Northern and Western Europe, appearing in the religions of the Germans, Celts, and Slavs. And it usually involves a procession in the sky this time. And again, that ties in when we hear about the night marchers often appearing to be levitating off the ground. Their feet never touch the ground. They're kind of floating through. In this case, the Wild Hunt can be seen in the sky and can involve a supernatural group of hunters, usually representing the souls of the dead, but could also have biblical figures or fairies, valkyries, elves. But again, it's a giant procession, and that it would foretell something coming like war or some catastrophe, or could just be the person who witnesses this foretelling their death. And so, yeah, throughout the world, we see a lot of these echoes of the same and the rhyming of different cultural traditions.
And interesting about the wild hunt, Mike, you also forgot to mention Harry Dresden participated in that too.
Oh, yeah. So. Explain Harry Dresden for some of our listeners.
Oh, well, Harry Dresden's just the Chicago warlock book series and such.
So, okay, but, yeah. Right, okay. Yeah. But in this case, getting back to what you heard and what you know, what are some of the origin stories that you know of that spark these traditions? Who are they? Where are they from? What do they want?
I believe they are just the Ali'i and their warriors just doing their customary things that they did in life. It's a ritual to tend after the heiaus, even though the heiaus are now ruins. They still visit them or they go there. But one thing is interesting, because of all the marchings that they would go from heiau or temple to heiau, there's these leaves called, that we refer to as tea leaves. And that's spelled T-I, tea leaves, not the drinking tea.
Right.
Those are known as cornelian fruticosta. There's different things that people do, and there's different things that occur or you can do if you see a night marcher. The whole tea leaf aspect throws a monkey wrench into things, because now when they approach a tea leaf area, they have to go around it. And a lot of local houses and businesses will plant tea leaves for decoration, but they might be moving the procession
right
off into like someone else's backyard or something.
Right. You were talking earlier about Jakob Grimm and some of the Grimm fairy tales and the comparative mythology and grouping that all together. So you end up, at least in the more modern times, of maybe a watered down and amalgamated kind of series of legends and specifics, but generally seeing that we understand it by definition of that's what the wild hunt is. And in the same way with the night marchers, you have these experiences that are all seemingly very specific. There's so many common elements to them. As you said, preserving tradition, doing their thing as warriors, military people march. That's what they do. They carry torches and weapons and they're dressed for battle. Is it, though, sparked from the violent, horrific battles that did occur? What do you think created the marching or them appearing as a tradition? Because, of course, people, you know, they talk about, you can see all kinds of ghosts on the battlefields of Gettysburg and throughout Europe, and people have all kinds of sightings, or there'll be maybe a time slip thing where they can hear the clank of armor and horses on cobblestone. But that seems to be something different. This seems to indicate that these night marchers are on a mission to preserve tradition and restore glory and restore kapu, the ancient code of conduct. But do you believe that they were born out of these violent encounters, these battles, which sparked their appearance? Or do you think that it's just a natural result of such a long, rich history of tradition that they just appear to keep things in order?
I think they just appear to keep things in order. There is a noticeable difference with pre-contact stories and post-contact stories.
Oh, right.
Where
right.
You actually encounter these demigods or these things where it's like, oh, this is the story of Christ here.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, that doesn't make any sense because these other stories don't have that. Or there's a redemption thing or these other things that, from studying folklore and all these stories for so long, years now, it's very identifiable where it's like, oh, and then this person or the individual went to hell. And it's like, okay, but that's a Western thought.
Right.
There's no real hell for the Polynesians. It's just an afterlife. Yeah. But that's why I think that it's just more of a custom or a tradition instead of a fabricated or a influenced by the Western ideal. And I think that they could be want to perpetuate the customs and the traditions. And that's what they did in life. And so they're doing that in their afterlife. And I don't think that it was like a violent death that occurred or anything. I think that it was just how they are. That being said, though, they believe that if you are killed by the night marchers, you join the procession.
Wow. Right. Well, again, like the Wild Hunt, some of the aspects of that myth is that you might be abducted to travel with them into the underworld or fairy kingdom, or you get pulled away in your sleep to join the procession, which is often led by a supernatural figure of importance, some mythological figure, some kind of leader, or somebody who is above the average warrior or hunter who's leading the procession. So you have a leader, you have sometimes you have gods.
The critical aspect of why it's sort of a good and bad thing when you, if you were to join the Night Marchers, because that's one of the ways that you can prevent being killed by the Night Marchers.
Oh.
Is if your ancestor or a relative is part of the Night Marcher procession.
Right.
Which is why when I mentioned that to Dr. Grant, my lineage, in theory, because my ancestor, Chief Kaiana, was a chief of high rank, and he was killed at the Battle of Nu'uanu, or died at the Battle of Nu'uanu. Those two aspects qualify him to be essentially part of the Night Marchers. So because of that, in theory, I should be safe, because he will speak up on my behalf and prevent me from being killed, which is why Dr. Grant was like, you could be part of this society.
You're protected. You're safe. You're the point man.
Yes, because I am safe. And a lot of people don't know this about Dr. Grant. And he'll be the first to admit it. He was the world's biggest chicken, which is why he would not go out in the field. He would be our historian and be like, all right, I got a call. And he would say, can you come and see my business or my house? I have this issue. And he'd say like, no. I'm sorry. You might be encountering this because this is in the area. Right. But now with me, he's like, right, Kamu, round up the group.
You go.
We got a call. You're going to this location. In theory, this is the history behind it. This is what you might encounter. Good luck. I'll see you folks maybe tomorrow or the next day. And we're like, okay,
hopefully,
let's go.
Right.
So, individuals would contact me to investigate their houses or businesses. So I was used to that. So
In terms of the perception of who and what they are in a more North American based idea of who or what they are, it might be thought, oh, that's damnation. You don't want to get caught up with them. That's a bad thing. You're trapped forever. You'll be doing all this or whatever. Or is it more considered in Hawaii as like a possible place of honor? It's not necessarily bad if it happens. Like, how is it perceived aside from ending your life, but the idea of becoming part of the Night Marchers, is that like a revered place to be?
To my knowledge, no.
Okay. So no. It's more of like those poor souls kind of thing.
Yeah. It's like, oh, something's going on. The surroundings are not really feeling right.
Yeah.
We should go. And it's like, yeah, we should go. We should go.
Okay.
Well, that is interesting, is we're always looking for a way to defeat the negative thing, the evil entity, the monster, in a sense, or at least a violent ending or encounter. And from Glenn Grant's video of a chicken skin episode, I think, that Scott shared with me on YouTube, there is an interview with Marie Solomon, and she was talking about her own experience here. And I believe it was maybe her niece who encountered the Night Marchers after waking up, you know, from kind of an impromptu nap under a tree, and sees the procession and hears them say, Maki, die, kill, because she has seen us. Then she hears the phrase, Kali, which she said means wait a second, hold on. And what she believes is that in other tellings of the experiences, that you'll sometimes hear shouted out, Na'u, meaning mine, my relative, do not touch, leave them alone. And the person is spared if they recognize that they are part of their lineage, the person experiencing the Night Marchers are related, and they are spared. As she was saying, how she was, her niece was spared is that one of the Night Marchers apparently recognized her as a future, I guess, descendant.
Descendant.
Yeah. And so her family was spared. And so that's why Dr. Grant put you out on point to, because you are protected. What do you think it is also about the tea plant? Because that's also found throughout Polynesian and Asian Pacific Islander culture, that there's something about that plant. Scott and I have talked about this before. We always thought it was very interesting that, and you can tell us, I think this is true, but the state of Hawaii and their transportation department planted tea plants along the highway because too many tourists were experiencing night marchers showing up in their rental cars as they were driving or looking in the rearview mirror, and there's a warrior sitting back there. And so they took it seriously. They started planting the tea plants along the stretch of the highway, and it seems to have stopped. Have you heard of that?
I believe I heard some news stories back in the day when that occurred, but that makes sense. The tea leaf, though, is used in Hawaiian ceremonies.
I see.
The kahuna would have that dip of the end of it in salt water or ocean water and then end up dashing it around.
Yeah.
But yeah, the tea leaves are actually a very critical part in Hawaiian rituals and customs.
I see.
And they also have tea leaf lays.
Yeah.
That's why it makes sense. The major things that for Hawaiian cultures and rituals would be tea leaf plants or the tea leaves and Hawaiian salt.
Oh, there you go. Salt. That's another that wards off the unwanted spirits. That is something also that Marie Solomon was saying. I think, I can't remember if it was her or one of some grandma or auntie, upon hearing that she was experiencing this, took a tea leaf shoot, chewed it up, and then placed it in the mouth of her niece. And that protected her. What do you think about people seeing the torches going off the cliff and the march of the warriors off the cliff? Because as Scott had found, that seems to be, with some archaeological evidence of skulls found, that seems to be true, that warriors were marched off the edge of a cliff.
Yeah, that was new. That was Nu'uanu.
Right. They were pushed off.
Yeah.
They ended up, the remains were found, hundreds of them, on the bottom of the pulley where they were pushed off. That was the Battle of Nu'uanu. And I would say that there's different stories. There's other stories of like torches going off a cliff. That actually might be the jumping off points. Because in Hawaiian belief is that when your soul departs your body, it goes to a location on the island that's a jumping off point or a leaping off point, where you would end up, your spirit would be standing there in line, and then it gets to this cliff part and it would jump off into the horizon, and on the horizon, a small portal would open and it would, your spirit would go in there.
No.
And that's how you would access the afterlife.
Where's the portal?
It's on the horizon.
It would
just open up on the horizon.
So that's the separation point.
In Polynesia, the afterlife is in the underground or underworld. Mm-hmm.
So it's similar to a kiva.
Yeah.
Yeah, the separation point of the body from the spirit. And that you have a cleaving and one goes off to the other, the body goes down to the earthly pit below while the spirit goes off into the portal, into the afterlife.
There's different portals. There's a, they believe that the monkey pod portal, the monkey pod trees had hungry ghosts and they would have to eat food and they would be sitting on a branch. And if a monkey pod tree was nearby, you would actually hear a branch break.
Mm.
And that belief was, the spirit ate enough food that it got heavy that it broke the branch, and a portal in the on the bottom of the monkey pod would open and it would get into the underworld or the afterlife. There's different cultures that believe that one because of the hungry ghosts and everything. So the hungry ghosts are actually part of mainly Asia.
Mm-hmm.
They have the hungry ghost festivals and stuff, but there are some Pacific Islander cultures that also believe that. So there's different ways to get into the underworld. There's also Polynesia or Pacific culture stories where individuals went to a tree and the tree ended up having a portal that got them to the underworld.
You had an additional encounter with the Night Marchers yourself, right?
The third time, to my knowledge, I was on the big island, really, island of Hawaii, and it was around 2 o'clock in the morning. But before then, we were in the Hilo side and there was a party going on nearby, locals just partying, drinking, playing music, talking, and that's fine. It's no big deal. My sister, mom, and I, we went into the house and we were watching movies until about 2 a.m. Right around then, it got just quiet and we heard a conch shell blow. It was odd because we just heard that. We didn't hear any other sounds from the party going on. And I turned to everybody and I said, Mom, that was a conch shell. And my mom was like, Kamu, it's 2 o'clock in the morning. Don't be silly. Who would be blowing their conch shell? But we thought it was just the party just getting out of hand. And, you know, they're just now turning to conch shell blowing. Yeah. And right. But at the same time, it was like, okay, so we continued watching our movie, and then the conch shell blew again. And sure enough, we did not hear the party. And at that time, my mom was like, okay, that's enough. We're going to sleep. She stopped the movie, and we turned off everything. We're like, good night. We're going to bed. I'm like, wait. She's like, nope, we're going to bed. I was in my 20s around this time.
Do you remember the movie you were watching?
No, can't recall.
Okay. The Big Island is actually the only island I've been to. I've been there 3 times, but I haven't been to any of the other ones. But you were born or grew up in Honolulu on Oahu, right?
Yes.
Okay. But do you have family on the other islands as well?
Yes. I have family and relatives on all the islands.
Okay. You would go back and forth to see people or whatever, just on those. You just do like hops on the jets, right? To like go back and forth. It's like a simple thing.
Pretty much island shuttles and such. So yeah.
Right.
There was the incident. We were investigating the Pully, and we wanted to do a special where we did a live call-in, and Dr. Grant had us on hold. He had this package or pre-recorded story that he was telling us, and I had us on my cell phone at the time, and it was on speaker. And when we were at this location, we heard this thump. We didn't know what it was, but nobody was really around because there was no real parking to be, and we walked in a ways. We passed it off as a coconut essentially falling off a tree and hitting the ground. That's what it sounded like. So we were like, okay. And Dr. Grant was on the phone with us or on the line. He's like, all right, well, we're going to be, after the story is done, we're going to bring you in and you could give us an update, comma. And I'm like, all right, cool. And then thump, we heard it again. And we're like, wow, okay, that was odd. And so he asked if we encountered anything. And I said, no. And one of the other members of our group said, oh, no, there's this sound, the coconut dropping. And I'm like, oh, yeah, that's right. There's the coconut thump. And then it occurred. And I said, that. Did you hear that, Dr. Grant? He's like, no. Wait, you're hearing this thumping? And I said, yeah, we're hearing the thumping. And it's sort of getting more frequent. And he just said, all right, Kamu, gather everybody up. Go back to where the cars dropped you off because there was no parking lot. Mm. And get out of there. And I asked, why? What's going on? And he said, I'll tell you as soon as you get everybody round up and you're safe. And I said, okay. So we went out there, or we got out of there, and the whole time he's like, are you safe? And we're like, no, we're still getting there. It takes us a while because we walked in a bit. And so we got out, and he said that what you encountered or what you were going to encounter was most likely the night marchers. That was the drumming to announce that they're arriving. We're like, oh, well, I'm safe, so I'm not sure about you guys, but we're okay. And Dr. Grant said, oh, well, did you guys get any recordings? And I turned to the tech guys, and they were like, we forgot to start recording.
Of course.
Yeah. And I was like, right. Dr. Grant, we did not get any recordings, but I'm going to take a recorder and I'm going to go back there. And he's like, no, don't do that. Don't do it. I'm like, no, it'll be fine. I'm good. I'm good. I could go back there and I'll be protected. It's good. He's like, no, don't do that. So we didn't do that. So.
Wow. Well, that brings me to another question. With regard to what happens if you see them, or you're too close, or you touch the shadow, or like, does this strictly live as folklore, or are there people that have vanished in the Hawaiian community?
There are people that claim they lost someone, but it's very rare.
Yeah.
And Dr. Grant, he collected a story that stated a Asian woman was going to be killed by the night marchers or encounter the night marchers, and someone saved her. And when she looked up, it was an individual dressed in plantation attire. So her ancestor worked a plantation, encountered the night marchers, and was killed. And so that individual saved her.
Oh, wow.
Going back into, if you are killed, then you could save your descendants.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Toomey, and you're listening to Astonishing Legends with Scott Philbrook and Forrest Burgess. Now back to the show.
How pervasive would you say encounters are among the typical Hawaiian?
Encounters are kind of rare, I would say, because being in that situation, personally, even at the Pali with the group and everything, a lot of us felt uncomfortable. Like, we should not be there. And something was going on. I kind of wanted to stay. The group had a saying where it's like, if something happened, the rules were, one, someone grab Kamu, two, run. Because they knew I would just stay there. And
yeah,
but they needed to use me as a shield. So they were just like,
yeah, exactly.
Oh, no, no, so we got to get out of here. So, but yeah, aside from that, the night marcher sightings are kind of rare. I've encountered people that worked on ranches and lived on ranches and worked on ranches, and they've seen torches line along the mountain, the ridge line, and then they'd be snaking down the side of the mountain, torch lights. One of the things that it reminded me of was the movie. We're total movie geeks here, guys. Like, seriously.
Well, join the ranks.
Yeah. Yeah, the 13th Warrior. There was that moment where they encountered that giant fire serpent or the fire dragon or whatever. And it was like
the glowworm
torches.
Yeah.
Yeah, the glowworm. That's what it was. Yeah.
Yeah.
Where there are a line of torches coming down the mountainside and everything. When I saw that, I'm like, oh, yeah, it's the Night Marchers.
Do you think there's any chance that it's like elder members of the community that are going out ceremonially and in a secret society kind of way, recreating the marches? Because they're so far away, maybe you wouldn't know that it's actually just flesh and blood humans that are carrying on a tradition.
If it is our kapuna or elderly, more power to them, because that's like
hard,
very
strenuous.
Difficult terrain. Yeah.
Always somewhere traversed. Really hard to be at. Right, right.
Yeah, okay. It's really hard to get to that area. Very, very harsh, undeveloped. It's a lot of lava rock around. Lava rock is very sharp and treacherous
to
get around it. And then that actually speaks to the fact that if it was people, them to have such a uniform line without stepping over or going over, you know, obstructions and such.
Yeah.
That sort of stands as a testament to like, no, there must be something else. So.
Okay. With the City of Refuge, you said that most of them are gone, but there's still one on the Big Island. Do you know where that is on the Big Island? Or are you even allowed to talk about it?
Right. Oh yeah. I mean, that's a major tourist location.
Okay.
So it's still
what
there.
What part of the island is it on?
I believe that's the Kona side of the island. Okay. Or the area, the southern side of the island, where they have like tiki's and areas that you can go there. And when you go there, it's really quiet, peaceful. It's very silent when you go there. I've been there a couple times, so that was pretty cool. So,
what is a City of Refuge, if you could explain that to our audience?
Well, a City of Refuge was a place that Hawaiians could go to if they violated a kapu. Those were the ones that were essentially hard to reach places that were just difficult to get through current or just blocked off or just inaccessible areas. So,
and that also reminds me of another anecdote in that we've told this story, I believe, before in the podcast years ago, but Scott and I met a really nice guy who had grown up in Hawaii. Now, he's not native, but he lived there all his life and, of course, surfed. And was telling us about a few of these stories, which also got us interested in doing a show about this one day. He was telling about these encounters that he'd had. One reminded me because of its inaccessible area that he saw something. So the story goes that he was out surfing, kind of lost track or wasn't paying attention, got carried out by the current, and then realized, oh, I'm in trouble. Like the beach, the access point there, the little bay where he was at, that he took off from, is now a long ways away. And he was drifting towards a really rocky, steep part of the coastline. And he wasn't confident that he could paddle against the current to get back, and there wasn't any waves to carry him in. So he was starting to panic a bit, and then he looks over, and again, it's a very steep, rocky cliff line that goes right down to the water, no beach except for this little tiny cove, you know, with a little bit of beach, and he looks over, and there standing on that little tiny patch of sand, there was a woman, a very beautiful woman, he described, long flowing black hair, wearing some kind of white robe, just standing, looking off. I don't think they made eye contact, but she was either combing her hair or doing something with her long, beautiful black hair. And he looked over and he had this feeling of peace. And of course, amazement is like, first thought is like, how did that woman get there? Like, did she climb down the cliff? Like, she couldn't have swam out there. I mean, her clothes look dry. How did she get to that spot, that little tiny alcove? Somehow, after seeing that, he was able to paddle back to shore, and he believes that he was saved by Madame Pele. Now, another story from a close friend of mine, I think, now he isn't Native Hawaiian, but he's vacationed there quite a bit. I believe he was hiking and, again, on a, near a cliff, just kind of meandering around. And I think at one point, like, he realized that, again, he wasn't paying that much attention, that he was getting too close to the edge. And then I think he saw a beautiful woman, white garments, long flowing black hair that kind of distracted him and made him look down and realize, like, oh, if I took a couple of steps in this wrong direction here, they don't go down. It's not a hikeable part of the trail. Like, it's a steep drop off. He may have fallen off the cliff. And he believes that, I think she showed up to say, like, hey, white boy, pay attention. You're about to fall off the cliff. And it took him out of his kind of a reverie here because, you know, it's a beautiful area meandering around and it saved him from danger. And of course, he looks up and she's not there anymore. Have you had a Madame Pele sighting?
I have. I've had two, to my knowledge. One encounter was, of all times, Valentine's Day again. As a side note, Valentine's Day was actually a pivotal moment in Hawaiian history. Most people don't realize or know that that was the day that Captain James Cook was killed.
Ah, right.
It was also the day that Dr. Grant and I formed the our society. And on this Valentine's Day, I was going home and I saw a woman walking along the side of the road. And this is on Oahu. White dress. I remember that because my headlights ended up reflecting off of her dress. And I just pulled up on the side and I wound down my window and she came up and I said, oh, did you need any help or are you okay? And interestingly enough, she ducked down and came into my car. Her whole body, she ducked down and came in and was staring at me. And the whole time she did not put her hands or touch my car.
It's almost like swimming into your car.
Yeah, you know how you're standing and then you duck down and you go up.
Yeah.
And she was just she studied me and she said, I've seen all I need to and I'm fine. Thank you. And then she ducked back. And I thought that was interesting because it's like she did the same motion and she didn't even hit the back of her head and didn't even look around. And then she started walking and I said, wow, that's unusual. So I drove off, but then I realized that it was Valentine's Day, Valentine's night. It was around 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock. And I said, something is not right here because it's Valentine's Day. She's in a dress. She should be with somebody. She probably left her date or somebody that she was with. So I could still see her. And there was a slight bend in the road. So I went along the bend of the road, turned around when I was out of sight because I didn't want to scare her. And when I came back around, it was all of 1 or 2 seconds. There was nobody on the road.
Okay. That's awesome.
I was just like, I think I just encountered Pele.
Wow.
Well, that's really cool. What's different about that is people often describe that as a blessing. It's a very rare honor to see her. And it's usually something where if she makes contact with you, like the two stories I just relayed, it's something to help you out. It's a positive experience, not a foreboding, unlike the night marchers.
Right. And they're talking about different cultures. There's, I believe in Europe, there are stories of helping wandering ghosts or traveling ghosts or spirits. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. So this is similar with Pele, the goddess of fire. she goes around and she'll ask people for water or a ride somewhere or for a cigarette, because you would offer her cigarettes or tobacco, or you would also offer her gin, which is her drink of choice.
Oh, okay.
The second time I encountered Pele was on the Big Island, and I was on Kona side, and I was in a hotel. I was eating dinner. You know that transitional period where people are now leaving the beach, or they're attending, or they're going to the beach to walk onto the beach before going to the their dinners or what have you. I was at the eating an early dinner at a restaurant with a view to the ocean. There's a little lagoon there, and I saw the transition going on. There was a woman that showed up, and she was in a white wrap, and she was on the beach. And I thought that I was kind of odd because she was alone, and everybody was grouped up because there's a lot of tourists there and some locals. But then she ended up going into the water, and that was very unusual because she kept her wrap on and she did not have a towel or a cell phone, especially in this day and age.
Mm-hmm.
She was treading water and she turned around and she was just staring at me the whole time. And it was like very uncomfortable for me. It was just like, I don't know what's going on. I finished my dinner. At that point, I had looked up and she was coming onto the beach. And she was right in front of me, like a distance away. I would say like maybe 100 yards, 125 yards or so. And then she was getting out of the water and she was walking straight towards me. And it was just like, okay, this is now a little uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. A realization dawned on me. I am now on the Big Island, possibly encountering a goddess, Pele, maybe Namaka. But the critical thing is, I am no longer protected because this is their domain. Whereas I would actually be protected with my ancestor for the Night Marchers. I'm like, right, I need to go. So I ended up leaving the restaurant. The restaurant was I had to leave left. But I ended up going left for a ways before getting to a hallway that led to doors that led to the hotel. And so when I got into the hallway, it was some distance. The glass doors were acting like a mirror reflecting. And as I was walking there, I could see her reflection walking behind me from the beach. Now, she did not have any towels or anything, but she was just dripping water. Undeterred, nothing was bothering her, and she was just walking straight and directly behind me.
Is she inside the building now?
No, she's on the beach.
But she's still coming. She's just coming up from the beach still, like directly behind.
Right. But the tricky thing was that I was over here and I saw her and she was walking and I had to go this way and essentially go that way towards the.
Okay. So relative to you, she's still right behind you, even though you're in an entirely new position. You changed where you were horizontally by a significant amount.
Yes.
And she's still coming straight at you on the beach.
And so I was like, okay, not looking back. I'm good. I just went into the hotel, went around the corner. I believe I lost count how many times I hit the elevator button, but I think it was a record. And then I got into the elevator and it thankfully closed. Nobody joined me in the elevator. And I went into my room and I was just like, right, okay, we're good. And that was, I believe that could have been Pele. It could have been Namaka, but
who is Namaka?
Namaka is Pele's sister, the goddess of the ocean who killed Pele.
Why did she kill Pele?
So basically, when Pele was fleeing from the wrath of her sister, this was before Pele was a goddess. Pele ended up seducing Namaka's husband, her brother-in-law. And so she fled. And she fled on canoe and she had her uncle's digging stick and she ended up digging holes in the ocean to try and find a shelter. So she created the island and is believed that's one of the Hawaiian islands. And she thought she could live there. Her sister Namaka ended up confronting her and dousing out her flames, leaving Pele for almost dead. Pele ended up getting back into her canoe, creating another island. And this continued until Pele was finally killed. But Pele's soul, Pele became a goddess at that point. And that's how she became the goddess of fire. So.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Ever since then, the sisters have been at war ever since. But Pele has, that's one of Pele's made nemesises. Nemesis.
One of those. But, one of those.
Yeah, she has others as well.
Mm-hmm. What do you think the spirit that you saw wanted from you? Was it to ask a question or make a statement? Or do you have a gut feeling about what is that encounter about? Were you just in the wrong place at the wrong time?
I think she made a statement. That's safe to say. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure exactly what, but
just sure. I exist. Hello.
Yeah. Just saying yeah. Hi. She could have done it less threatening, I guess. Right. Or it's like, right. Wow, this is yeah. Interesting. I'm not exactly sure. But friends actually pointed out that they know I'm going to show up or I'm going to be around because unusual things happen.
Mm-hmm.
Relatives actually say that my sister, in fact, would actually say that she would see an owl fly by,
mm-hmm.
or an owl in a branches of a tree. And she would say, oh, I'm going to see Kamu, or he's going to call me or something. And then like a little while later, she'd get a phone call and be like, I'm telling her that mm-hmm. I'm actually going to be staying with her on the Big Island for a while because something is going on. And she's like, I knew you were going to call because I saw your Amakua. Amakua is a spirit guardian or a spirit animal. And mine specifically is a pueo or an owl.
Oh, that's and cool.
Families have their own Amakua, and that's like the mo'o or lizard or dragon. And you have the shark, and you have various other ones. So turtles right. or the honu. But my Amakua is different. Growing up, my family would say like, oh, that's not your Amakua. Your Amakua is not an owl. But I would tell them, no, my Amakua is an owl. I just mm-hmm. know that. And then
yeah.
sure enough, it's like my mom, when she was pregnant with me, she said she'd never seen so many owls just all around the, uh-huh. the house and everything. And it's unusual seeing an owl in general. And there was a time where I was with the society and we were investigating a place in town, and a white owl came screeching through the night air, and then it perched in a branch right above me.
Oh, wow.
Well, you're one. Yeah.
I was like, oh, okay. And it was funny because I turned to everyone like, I guess Hogwarts has a message for me.
You're looking for your letter or beautiful Hawaiian postcard. You are a magnet, it seems. And also very common, as we hear with a lot of other experiencers, that they feel like, or the people around them, their friends and family, feel like you are a, not a portal, but maybe a catalyst for other experiences happening. And so you're kind of the capstan here. But it's just so interesting how all these themes of experiences have different variations throughout the world. And there's a commonality there, no matter what the culture is, in owls, in apparitions, and some kinds of premonitions here. But it's interesting. It also runs in the family. Do you have other family members that also experience things like this, or do you think it's passed down?
They believe that abilities and such like this mm-hmm. are passed down through our mother's side, so from mm-hmm. females. Mm-hmm. I was told that my great-grandmother was a tutukane. And tutu is Hawaiian for grandmother, and mm-hmm. kane is Hawaiian for male. And so she was known as a tutu kane or a tutu lady. And there's not a lot. A lot of people would just not say much about her. But mm-hmm. There was something about her. And from the stories that I heard, she told my grandmother that my mom would be somebody that she had to watch. And apparently there were times when my mother would end up going into these trances or something where her eyes would become black and she would just start speaking Hawaiian, which is unusual because my mother was not fluent in Hawaiian at the time. Oh, so she was essentially speaking in tongues.
Wow.
That's pretty much, to my knowledge, the extent of my sensitivity for that with my family members. I have a lot of other stories, in fact, encounters as well, investigations. What was intriguing for me was my abilities also work in the mainland. And to my knowledge, the first time that I encountered that was actually in Vegas. My sister and I met up with my mom, and we were teenagers at the time. And my mom was saying, oh, who were you talking to? And we're like, we're talking to these people, blah, blah. And my mom knew for a fact there was nobody there. She did not mention it at the time, but then she said that, yeah, later on, she's like, oh yeah, that happened. But that actually echoes my first encounter, that one of my first encounters, and that's with the famous Hawaii's beloved faceless ghost, the Mujia, from While I Drive In. For the longest time, I swear I saw this faceless woman. And my mom kept saying, no, no, no. And I'm like, no, I saw this faceless woman. And my mom kept saying no because she did not want to scare my sister.
Right.
And then she'd just be like worried. But when I was finally in high school, my mom admitted, she's like, okay, yeah, you saw that. And I was like, thanks. I was just going through most of my life now thinking that I was going crazy. But I was like, no, no, I saw this. And
right.
In fact, that could be a free gift for your audience. They could hear my story of the Mujia if they want. legendsfromthepacific.com/gift, but then you can also add that as a thing. So
okay, oh, that's great.
Thank you so much. I was just looking it up. I didn't know the story about the drive-in.
That's what
precipitated her appearance, was when it was torn down.
No, that was when it was, we attended when it was still up. So
oh, okay.
She hung out in the women's restroom.
So. Oh wow. Okay.
Yeah. Wow.
Basically, my mom and dad divorced when I was very young. So because of that, my mom would end up like, I'd have to go to the women's restroom. And it was just like, oh, I hate this, because it was like them and me, my mom and sister and me. So then my mom would always like check it, everything out, make sure everything was okay and stuff. So,
but, oh yeah. Yeah.
but when I was actually in Savannah, I was at a bar and I went downstairs and I didn't know anything about this place. And there was a side room that was barred off. There was no lights in that side room. I stopped and I looked in there, or glanced in there, and I knew something was up in the ceiling. And I was like, I'm not sure what that is, but there's something up there and it's dark and I don't know. Went to the restroom because it was downstairs, finished, went back upstairs, got my drink. And I asked the bartender, so I know that Savannah's haunted and everything, have you seen anything? And he said, I haven't seen anything, but everybody says that there's something downstairs.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, what? He's like, oh, in the side room, apparently somebody hung themselves and there's like a ghost down there and stuff. And I'm like, right.
Okay.
Got it.
Wow.
I was like, I mean, I wasn't even in there for very long. Like, in the, I just walked into the bar and it was just like, I'm going to get a drink, but I need to use the restroom. Where is it? Downstairs. All right, cool. Went down there and just like, okay, all right, let's go. So, yeah.
Always the restroom. Well, yeah.
Kamu, we want to thank you for taking the time. Why don't you remind our listeners where they can find your show, what the name of your show is, and where they should look for?
Well, my show is Legends from the Pacific. That is the Asian and Pacific Islander folklore and cultural history podcast. It's available wherever you stream. So if your listening device or the player that you're listening to this show right now, you can actually do a search for Legends from the Pacific and find us there. And swing by legendsfromthepacific.com. That's usually the best ways to get in touch with me. I'd like to thank you, Scott and Forrest, for having me on. And hopefully your listeners found this insightful.
It's been wonderful to have you. We appreciate you taking the time. I'll leave you with one last thing here, or one last question. For our listeners, should they either be in Hawaii or visit Hawaii, or they're there and don't know about the night marchers, what would you advise people to do if they do see them?
Run. Get out. I mean, that's usually the safe bet. If you encounter the night marchers, then you really shouldn't be there, because essentially, like, the night marchers are making themselves known. They're going through all these things, like even the Ali'i back then, because they did not want to lose their people. So that's why they would bang drums, they would play conch shells and stuff. So it's like, listen, we're coming. We've done all we can to try and get you out of our way. They're doing this now. So if you do encounter them, then just like get out of there, because there are theories and such that things you could do to keep you safe. And it's questionable if it's actually legitimate or not. One of the things is to make yourself nude. Take off your clothes. Another thing is to cover yourself in urine, because it could make you untouchable or dirty so they won't touch you, so they won't kill you. But that's not really proven or anything. The only thing that is proven is that you'll be safe is if you see them from a distance, or if your relative is part of the procession. Those are seem to be the tried and true things. But, you know, I mean, like anywhere else, if you're visiting Hawaii, I hope you have a great time. It's a great place. It's nice. People there are friendly. But, you know, a lot of people say, oh, they're rude and blah, blah. And it's like, just be respectful. That's all it is. Just be respectful. Don't look for a fight or anything. Enjoy yourself, but just do what you can and enjoy yourself, but take in the culture. Take in, do what you can to leave it a little better than how you found it. That's usually what I tell people. And it's usually like a great saying for almost anything. Small dose of respect and understanding goes a long way, especially with Hawaii and the paranormal in general.
That's going to wrap up episode 284 of Astonishing Legends. A very special thank you to our guest, Kamuela Kaneshiro, for joining us. Find and subscribe to his podcast, Legends from the Pacific, wherever you get your podcasts. A reminder, we are taking a break from main show production for 4 weeks to work on some new projects we've had in the pipeline for a while. But don't worry, we'll release some special episodes during the break so you won't get lonely. In the meanwhile, find and subscribe to the other shows from the Astonishing Legends Network too. The Midnight Library, Scared All the Time, and Richard Haddam's Paranormal Bookshelf. We have links to all of them in our show notes. You can also find us at patreon.com/astonishinglegends.
Astonishing Legends is edited by Sarah Voorhees-Wendell at VW Sound and co-produced by Tess Feifel, who is also head of research and the social media manager. Our technical producer is Ed Vacola, or as we call him, the mechanic. Special thanks to our announcer, John Boland.
I'm Kelsey Pinson. Hi.
I am Jeremy Toomey.
Galaxy-wide in perpetuity. I understand this is with no implied promise.
However they see fit.
Our theme, which is available as a ringtone, was composed by Judson Crane at foundermusic.com. All other music and sound design for the show is composed and created by Alan Carestia.
Our logo was created by Tommy Beaver Design, and our animated graphics for social media and YouTube are done by Joshua Sloan at deadstreetproductions.com.
Every episode going back to September of 2020 has a transcription available on its corresponding webpage at our website. Earlier transcriptions can be made available upon request to astonishingcontact@gmail.com.
Astonishing Legends would not be possible without you, our listeners. Visit our store at astonishinglegends.com or interact with us and other listeners on Instagram, Twitter, Discord, Facebook, and YouTube.
You can also visit us at patreon.com/astonishinglegends, where patrons have access to additional bonus content, including the Patreon-exclusive show Astonishing Junk Drawer, which is available every week the main show is not. No part of this show may be reproduced anywhere without permission. Copyright Astonishing Legends Productions.
Good night.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.